Is it really interesting to see how these companies are approaching Chicago, right?
She was telling me she's really trying to understand how the tech ecosystem here works.
What's interesting about the baby boomers is that they've never met a debt they didn't like.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, at 720 WGN.
Welcome to the show, everybody. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in for Steve Bertrand all week. Be here all week, everybody. ThinkLink.com, BestMoneyMoves.com. So much to get to today. We've got Jim Dulkey and Catherine Davis from Chicago Inno sitting in the studio today. I love when people actually come in. Welcome on this beautiful, hot, warm, sunny day. Oh, I'm sorry. San Francisco-like summer day. It's perfect for what you're doing, right?
That's right.
Welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch. So we've got wonderful stories from you today that I want to jump right into. So let's start at the top. You've got, Catherine, you were in a self-driving car?
That's right. So last week I took a demo ride in a self-driving car made by a company called VSI Labs, and they're actually based in Minneapolis. But the Chicago tie is that they're working with a Chicago tech company called HERE Technologies, creating some mapping tech that helps keep this car in a single lane.
Okay, so I just have to know, how nervous were you? Like, did anybody touch the wheel the whole time?
So, yes, full disclosure, our driver got us onto the Kennedy Expressway before allowing the car to do any autonomous capabilities. And even still, he was still operating the gas and the brake. So the car was just steering itself.
Okay, but Teslas do that. So how is it different?
So it's a little different because the technology that's kind of behind the mapping system, so that's what HERE is making, it's a technology sort of different from your average navigation system. It's something so detailed that the car knows how many lanes are on a street, the lane markings, what each lane is used for, and so it helps the car remain centered.
All right, so you're in this, were you in the front seat or the back seat?
I was in the passenger front seat.
Passenger front seat.
Yeah.
How nervous were you? Scale of 1 to 10.
Not that nervous. Maybe like a 2. I was just really excited to kind of see this.
I'm nervous for you.
I knew the tech was safe. They wouldn't have brought us in it if it hadn't been. But it was just really kind of surreal to watch the steering wheel kind of navigate itself and turn on its own. I've never seen that in person before. So it was a really fun experience.
Do they just have a license to do this on the highway? Is that why they weren't? You know, they drove you basically to the highway?
No, I don't really think it's about any kind of regulations like that. I think it was just kind of the easiest way for this demo to go down.
And, you know, it's interesting. We have not seen a lot of driverless activity in Chicago as compared to other cities. Other markets are really kind of taking a leadership position when it comes to driverless cars. And we've talked on this program a lot with Steve about how kind of Chicago has really, really taken a wait and see approach. And that's not necessarily the wrong approach, but it's just interesting to see how Chicago's taken a back seat to driverless cars. The city does kind of have a task force currently in the works right now who's doing a lot of research and figuring out ways to implement this. But it's interesting to see, you know, Chicago has a company like HERE Technologies, which is doing this really innovative mapping tech with driverless cars here based in the city. Can Chicago kind of rise to become a larger player with autonomous vehicles?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm not sure, as a person driving around, and I've seen them driving around San Francisco and the Bay Area, you know, you basically literally have to step out of the way before being, you know, run over by them. There's so many of them. I think we have taken kind of a back seat, but in a place that we are taking a front seat, or maybe not front, maybe kind of middle row, Lime kicked off the scooter pilot. Was it last week, I think?
It was over the weekend. It started on Saturday.
And so when you look at Lime, another kind of transportation that I literally am tripping over scooters when I travel to San Francisco or Los Angeles or Denver, and they're everywhere. And all the problems that you hear about where people just leave them wherever, and there's so many risks of injury. I have myself, not known for being tremendously agile, tripped over one and stubbed my toe. How do you think it's going to play here in Chicago?
Well, it's interesting. So it just happened over the weekend. We've got 10 different brands. So it's Lime and 9 other scooter companies
sure.
in Chicago. So it's got a covering about a 50 square mile stretch in the south, west and sort of northwest parts of the city. And what I think, scooters get criticized because one, they are kind of goofy looking and they're new and they're weird. And I think if you've got a very difficult commute in Chicago already, having to navigate another form of transportation is kind of just annoying to you. But I think that they serve a really great sort of last mile transportation role for a lot of commuters and a lot of travelers in Chicago. And I think that the problems you see with them, clutter on the sidewalks, people tossing them in the road, people tossing them in a tree or in the water, I think those can be fixed pretty simply. I think that the benefit that they serve long term is worth having to deal with sort of this clutter to begin with. I think these are issues that, like, if you get the scooter companies to do a better job with organization, to have more people on the streets, making sure that they're more organized, I think they're going to work really nicely. Yes, they're going to be in the way a little bit. You may stub your toe once or twice, but I think ultimately, long term, these are going to be a really great way to get around the city and hopefully not get in your way too much.
Well, later in the show, we've got somebody from Lime coming into the studio. You guys won't be here yet, but we'll talk a little bit more about what their plan for keeping it out from under my own feet. Of course, this is what it's all about. Whataburger, just quickly before we go to break, Brian Trott bought a majority stake. You know, how's that going to play for them?
Man, it's funny. That story got a lot of people in Texas really upset that a Chicago firm, you know, bought a majority stake in their Texas firm, in their Texas fast food chain, right? So it's going to be interesting to kind of see where that develops. But, you know, it's funny how people take ownership over certain brands and get really spooked when other companies come in and acquire them.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, we will hear more about that as well. And then you have a bunch of really interesting stories that I want to get to in the second half of the show. But just to touch on it very briefly, I mean, and as a startup owner, I got to say I'm all in this. We're seeing incredible growth in the startup space.
That's right. Yeah, a new study looked over the last 10 years about the growth of startups in Chicago and really a meteoric rise in the number of companies here.
Yeah, it's really great. When we get back, I want to talk a little bit more about how that plays out, especially in comparison with San Francisco, Denver, even Los Angeles. We're seeing such amazing things. So we're starting to see some really incredible numbers. And your own story talked about how Chicago really compares quite favorably to what's going on with a lot of the rest of the country. So maybe you want to dig in there?
Sure. So a new report kind of took a look at startup growth over the last decade. So sort of looking at 2008 versus 2018, looking at startup hubs across the country to kind of measure the startup growth. So total volume of startups between those 10 years. And in Chicago, the rate of startup growth increased 270%, which is good for seventh highest in the country. So
that's good, right?
Chicago really outpacing major startup hubs that it's typically compared to. So outpacing places like Austin and Denver and DC and Seattle. You know, the city grew from 900 startups in 2008 to more than 3,300 in 2018. So an increase of over, you know, 2,400 businesses. So that's a lot of new startup growth in the city. And I think the one thing that you see often in Chicago is that, you know, the city it punches below its weight as a startup hub. A city the size of Chicago should have more startup success stories, more exits, more venture capital. But one thing that you are seeing is that the volume is starting to get there. Now, one negative of this report is when you look at Chicago versus a city like Los Angeles, for example. Los Angeles grew faster than Chicago over those 10 years and has more than twice as many total startups. So a city that's not even twice as big as Chicago is producing twice the number of startups. So the LA startup scene really kind of catching fire right now. Chicago having a little work to do to kind of get to that pace.
So why do you think that is?
Well, I mean, success breeds success. You know, you see companies like Snapchat was founded in that area, right? So, you know, companies that can grow from that garage room startup to have a major IPO kind of success will breed new startups. And I think LA has done a great job of kind of getting to that next level that Chicago just really hasn't been able to do. So what, you know, we're going to hopefully see is Chicago kind of get more big level exits and IPOs kind of at the level that places like LA have. And that's going to only breed more startups. That's what the whole kind of startup ecosystem is all about.
And yet we've had some of those, right? Grubhub is a wild success. We've had a bunch of others. We're having big companies like Google move pieces of their company. Cybersecurity spin-out is coming here, and they're building it up here. Is it better to have a startup culture, or is it better to be higher in the number of startups versus maybe it's better to have Google come in and just, you know, pay for 1,000 new jobs?
Well, here's what Google coming here does is that it creates a lot of job opportunities, and then it creates an opportunity for those people to work at Google or like you mentioned, the Google Spinout Chronicle, which is a cybersecurity spinout that's opening a big engineering office here. you know, they work at Google for a couple of years and then they launch their own business. So being able to kind of, and that's what the whole Amazon
and
HQ
good,
too,
right?
That's why Chicago so badly wanted, and all these cities wanted Amazon HQ too, is because yes, it's going to open up a tons of Amazon jobs, but then the idea is that, you know, some percentage of those employees would then spin off to create their own startups.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, and of course, we want startups because we want the jobs, we want the hipness of the culture, we want, what else do we want out of it?
Well, you know, you want to be an attractive place for, you know, new graduates to stay and live, right? So, you know, if a startup, if a city has a great startup ecosystem, lots of tech businesses, lots of young people want to work in tech, and tech is one of the most fastest growing industries, you know, across the nation. So Chicago wants to have a thriving startup ecosystem, so its graduates remain in Chicago and they have like high revenue or high salary jobs and opportunities to work within the city. And then, you know, being able to kind of create their own startups out of that even just provides more opportunities and more jobs for the next generation of Chicagoans.
Which is all good. Now, another Chicago startup wants to help romance novel readers discover new authors and books. So, Catherine, tell me about that.
Yeah, so this is a new startup based out of 1871, a big accelerator or incubator here. And the company's called Book in Maine. And basically what they're trying to do is allow romance novel readers find their next book and help the authors connect with new readers. So this is an online platform that allows users to search books based on like 350 keywords. And so that can be everything from historical romance novels to ones about firemen to ones, you know, that have more supernatural themes to them, like vampires. So it's a really interesting platform.
It sounds great. And how young are they as a startup?
Yeah, so they were just launched in 2017, so going on about 2 years now. They're raising some money kind of in a different way. It's on a equity platform called Republic, and they've raised about $50,000 so far. You know, but the interesting thing is, you know, why romance novels? I was talking to the founder about this, and the reader section is, or population is really specific because the amount of books that they're reading is a lot more than those of other genres. And then on the kind of the flip side, romance novel authors are writing books at a rate that you don't really see in other genres as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there's just a lot of people looking for books in this genre.
Well, I know that I look around at my friends and they're still actually reading physical books. But as an author who has a digital version of every book I've ever written, you know, you really appreciate having people find you in ways other than just Amazon. So being able as an author to set up an Amazon, you know, platform for yourself is great. And it gets a lot of traffic and hopefully they buy. But you definitely need other ways to have readers find you.
Book in Maine is also doing some really interesting things, I'd imagine, with the data that they're able to collect, right? So they're basically a keyword search platform. So they're learning what readers want to read about. So that's really valuable data to the publishers.
Yeah, it's exciting to see that a startup is really tapping into that need. It's so important. Well, Jim and Catherine, thank you so much for being with us. For more information, you can go to chicagoinno.com.
That's right.
Welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm your host, Elise Glink, sitting in for Steve Bertrand all week. He is off on some fabulous vacation. You can find his pictures online. I am the CEO of Best Money Moves. We're an innovative financial wellness platform, and I am the publisher of thinklink.com, which you've heard me about talk about for a long time. And normally this is my segment with Steve to talk about all things related to business and financial wellness. But since I'm hosting the show this week, we thought we'd talk instead to Nico Probst. He is the head of government relations for Lime. Lime kicked off its scooter pilot with the First Ride Safety Academy this weekend. And you just went live in Chicago, right?
We did this past Saturday.
Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So, you know, Lime is one of a number of different scooter platforms. And I was saying in an earlier part of the show that I have tripped over my fair share of them. I'm not the most agile out there, but you're doing a lot to try and make it a safe entry point for last mile, right? Last
yep.
mile transportation. So tell me a little bit about how the kickoff went.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we have launched in over 100 cities across the globe. We're in over 27 countries across the globe. And so we've got a lot of experience in how to manage a scooter program. And so it was very important to us on the front end of this launch to really make safety a vocal point of how we wanted to get Chicago initiated to the program. And the way we did that is when we kicked off this Saturday event, we invited Chicagoans out to Union Park to actually get a tutorial on how to utilize the scooter, which is really important to familiarize our new riders with this program from the front end. We really, really want folks to be acclimated to the program, be acclimated to a scooter before they get on. And so that's been a key commitment of ours. And from our perspective, it was a really great way to launch, really ensuring that folks know the rules of the road, how to utilize the scooter. And we're going to be continuing to do that throughout the pilot all summer long.
All right. So the pilot is in how many wards and where in the city can we find it right now?
So it's all on the west side of the city. It's about 17 wards, but some of those wards are very small portions of it. I think it's about 11 or 12 wards where the total ward itself is comprised in the pilot area itself. It's west of Halsted, and then the river branches sort of make the north and south end of the pilot program. If your scooter gets outside of the pilot area, what the city has asked us to do as companies is put a geofence outside of the pilot area. So if your scooter actually gets out of there, it slows down and then stops. So it's actually not able to be utilized outside of the pilot area.
Oh, I love this. So you're on the scooter and you're trying to get to your job and oops, I'm sorry, you're now east of Halsted and you can't go anywhere.
That is how the program is set up. I think okay. The city has been focused on utilizing this program as a way to evaluate how do scooters fit into the long-term transportation options that they're looking at.
Yeah, I think it's a real concern, right? It's you know, for decades, people just walked from the train station. So, you know, people like me, you know, who are 100 years old, were like, what do you mean you can't walk from the train station? It's good for you. Good exercise. But this is a, you know, primarily, I assume you're not going for the, you know, post-70 market here, right?
Well, you know, I think the unique thing about scooters, what they have shown in every city that we've operated is that they brought a new demographic of individuals to the fold. I think one of the limitations we've seen with biking forever is that, you know, folks may not want to utilize that as a commuting option because you might get sweaty, it's not easy with some of the clothes that you wear to work. And so scooters have really initiated a whole new set of folks. In San Diego, for example, we did a survey study on what our demographics of riders look like, and it was incredibly diverse, well below the median income of the city. And I think that told us a couple things, that folks are really utilizing these as a new form of transportation. I think that's exciting, especially in the pilot area that we're operating, where there are more limited transportation options, especially in the western parts of the city. And so if we can showcase these as a new mobility option to folks and get them on them, maybe that can connect to their public transit options that they're utilizing. So, you know, you get on the bus, you get on a scooter, then you connect to a train. That can be a really, really great way to change your daily commute and hopefully incentivizes folks to get out of their cars and into something else.
Well, getting out of the cars is a good thing as well. So tell me about some of these different safety efforts and safety educations and initiatives that you're doing as part of this launch with the city. I know one of them is you have to basically watch a video on safety.
Yep. And that's a really important component because just staring at the scooter and then getting on it isn't going to be enough. So we want to make sure that folks know how to actually use the scooter and where it should be used. That's another important component. The best place to use them is in the bike lanes or the shoulder side of the road and not on sidewalks, because we don't want folks dangerously interacting with pedestrians, especially when sidewalk is a very limited amount of space. And so that is a big component of what we're showcasing to folks. But then also how to properly use them, where the brakes are located, how to interact safely with car traffic. Those are all the big focal points that we're making within these Lime Academy tutorials that we're doing. We're going to be doing them in every ward within the pilot throughout the summer. We're hoping to do about 2 to 3 each week, and we'll pop up in different neighborhoods and showcase these safety efforts. But we also really want to make sure folks know what the scooter is on the front end. I think sometimes when we show up, they sort of come overnight, and that's something I think some Chicagoans experienced this past week, and all of a sudden there were scooters on the road in the morning. And so we want to familiarize the community with them as well, and that's a big component of it. But I think these first ride academies, as we're calling them, doing consistently throughout the pilot area all summer long is a really, really key differentiator that we've invested in Chicago, and something that we've really promised the city that we're going to be focused on is ensuring folks know how to use these properly and safely.
Now, one of the other things you're going to be doing is distribute free helmets. Where do you pick up a helmet?
Yep. So if you come to one of these First Ride Academies and you actually get a tutorial, we're going to be passing out helmets. So this past weekend, we passed out over 115 helmets to all the individuals that showed up and got a First Ride tutorial. And that is great because that starts habitualizing helmet usage. I think, you know, one of the limitations of doing, you know, a shared program with shared helmets is there's sanitary concerns with shared helmet usage, right?
Oh, yes.
That's obviously a barrier to passing to sharing helmets. So we really want to habitualize it and make sure that folks realize that using a helmet is an important part of every single ride. And giving helmets is a key component of doing that.
How do you find one? Like, if everybody's leaving them all over the place, and I've seen a few cities like in San Francisco where they're just strewn all over sidewalks and half off the street and who knows. How do you find one instead?
So you would download the app, our app, the Lime app. You can download it on any phone system. And then within the app itself, it shows you where one of the products are at. Mm-hmm. And then you would take your phone, and every product has a unique QR code on the top of the product. You would scan that QR code, and the app is linked directly to your credit card. So as soon as you unlock the product, you take off from there and then park it appropriately at the end of the ride. It's a perfect A to B, end-to-end destination transit option. And so it's a very seamless transportation option as well.
Right. So I can imagine if I'm getting off the train station and I want to go, which is, you know, I want to go west. That's east of Halsted, mm-hmm. technically, but I assume they're there. And now I've taken it to wherever I'm taking it. Now I'm some other person. I'm coming out. Where do I go to? I just have to look at my app and it tells me the closest one. So I might have to walk there anyway.
Yeah. You know, in a perfect world, places where we're scaled, we're at, you know, pretty full scale and really meeting the demand of the city. The best cities that really take this on is you don't even necessarily have to look at the app, where scooters are sort of available everywhere you're at and the key places that you'd be at. And so that's usually the best case scenario. But with this program, I think looking at the app, finding out where the scooter's at, moving yourself to it, and then scanning the product is the way it's going to work here.
Awesome. Well, Nico, thank you so much for giving us a little eye in on the Limeade launch. We wish you a lot of luck.
Appreciate it. Thank you for having me in.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you. I'm Elise Glenk. Amy Guth is coming up in a couple of minutes on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Stay tuned for that and more. And we'll be right back.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Shopping in the city is a unique experience because of the buzz, the kinds of stores, and of course, the people. But there's one building in particular that holds a store that stands out from the rest, and that is the Bloomingdale's on Wabash. It's in one of the older buildings in the shopping district known as the Medina Temple. It's been around since the early 1900s, and it's been updated over the years to keep its heritage, but it's going under the knife for another facelift. Friedman Properties is the company that has bought the building, and they plan on moving the Bloomingdale's out of the building and something else will take its place, but not before the scaffolding and netting goes up to provide updates and tweaks to the Chicago staple. Another big time Chicago staple is Merchandise Mart, and that house is 1871, and they're providing another opportunity to kickstart Chicagoans into the data analytics world. They're offering a class on Tuesday, June 18th from 6:30 to 9 p.m., and it's the beginning of a 6-week course that will help break down those big data sets that make up pretty much everything these days. So check it out at 1871.com. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thanks, Orion. A lot of news, a lot of water. We'll check back with you for another agribusiness update soon. I'm Elise Glenk sitting in for Steve Bertrand on the Wintrust Business Lunch. And normally it's Amy Guth who's sitting in Philly for Steve, and I come in to do my segment. But today the tables are turned. Amy Guth is, of course, the host of Crane's Daily Gist. And she pops by to talk a little bit about what's coming on the show today. What are you talking about?
Well, today I talk with Crane's reporter Claire Bushy. She covers lawn manufacturing, about the freight industry and what an interesting economic tell it is. But there's a story on there that was very big on social media this weekend, in addition to the Target Down story. And that was about the sale of the majority stake in Whataburger. So I am from Texas originally, so I know all about...
You don't sound anything like
I've
a Texas girl.
I never sounded much like one, but I've worked hard not to sound even a little bit like one.
All right.
But I know and love Whataburger. And so this was immediately I started seeing people in my networks talking about this going, oh, no, it's going to change. What's happening? So that's how I first got alerted to this story from my own network. But quickly, we learned that Byron Trotz, BDT Capital Partners, bought a majority ownership in the company. They've been Whataburger's been around. It's based in San Antonio. It's been around for about 70 years. And, you know, even though they have more stores, they have 800 locations in 10 states, which is bigger than, really bigger than like Shake Shack and In-N-Out Burger all put together, all combined.
Wow, that's a lot of milkshakes.
That's a lot. That's a lot. But it doesn't have that national reach. And so the family that owns the company of Whataburger said, you know, this is, we're ready to go national. We're ready to go with this next step. And so I think there was, for people from the area, from one of those 10 states where there are Whataburgers, I think there was some degree of betrayal happening on social media. Of, one what's going to change.
But wasn't this like what happened with Carl Jr.'s?
Exactly.
And they hired Paris Hilton to take a really huge bite of a burger she would never normally touch in her life.
Yeah.
With her size 0000 body.
Right.
And she took a huge bite and the fat dripped down her chin and suddenly that was a national chain.
Right. So, you know, who knows what Whataburger is going to do in their process to scale. But we shall see. But that in addition to the target down, those were some big social media stories over the weekend.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting when you think about how companies want to take something that seems regional and just kind of broaden that base. And how do you do that? And why doesn't the family, which is running a highly successful, they've got $2 billion in sales, they've got 800 stores. I mean, clearly, you know, margins may be not great, but they're certainly big enough to support more of a national reach. Why sell that now? You think this is maybe just an exit strategy?
Probably is. Probably is like, you know, we've been doing this a while. We're going to go take a break. We're going to have a vacation.
What did you say? It was 100 years for this guy?
Almost. It's 70 years that it's been this family-run company. So it's probably just a matter of, you know, shifting interest from the next generation from the company. They want to do something different.
Right.
That said, some leadership is going to stay on the board. So hopefully we won't see too much change that will be, you know, any kind of change, even positive change, tends to really disrupt the consumer. Even when Facebook changes the font for their logo, people flip out about that. So, you know, people don't like change. People aren't really wired for it. So we shall see what they do next.
All right. So let's talk about that for a moment, because it's interesting to think about the other chains that have sort of popped up in the hamburger space. So we've got Meatheads that's popped up, Shake Shack, to your point. McDonald's is obviously the homegrown market leader of national restaurant hamburger chains. But watching these different brands pop in over the last few years, it strikes me that I know that in Texas and in their, you know, current market, people are dedicated to these. But just the way that In-N-Out Burger people were dedicated
very
to
dedicated
it.
In California. Yeah.
You know, how many more burger chains can we possibly use in Chicago?
I know. And then factor in the conversation that Steve and I were having last week about how everybody, you know, all these companies are getting into the plant-based protein space, and how Tyson announced they're going to come out with a half pea protein, half Angus burger.
Wait, what a not a burger?
It's a not a burger. That's
right.
It's a not a burger. I hope that's what Whataburger calls their
not a burger.
Meatless alternative, the not a burger. I really hope that's what they do.
Go and trademark that. No.
Yeah, let's go buy that domain right now.
Yeah, right now. So when you have all these different companies, though, coming to the forefront, I mean, it really, you know, your take on kind of this fast food nation that we've become, combined with some of the other big chains that are sort of popping up here, things like True Food, right, is a chain that came out of, you know, wherever that came out of, Seasons 52. You're starting to see the different things that were very regional now pop up nationally. And of course, Chicago being a great eating city, we're seeing it here too.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're in an interesting moment in the food world, just because consumer interests are starting to be a little more aware of their environmental footprint on the food they eat and how their choices, impact the planet. And yet we have fast food everywhere. It's very easy to get, very accessible, relatively inexpensive. So I think in the next couple of years, we're going to look back and say there's been a huge, huge shift in the way we eat and the way the food industry has responded to us.
Yeah, no, I think that's really the case. And of course, you can find out more on Crane's Daily Gist, which
that's
is going well, I think. Yes.
It feels like it. No one's complaining to me. So I feel like
okay, well,
good
you know, in the media that when people complain, that's when you start to hear
that's
from
right,
them.
That's right. That's right. So, yeah, the best way to find it, you can find it on Spotify or iTunes, or you can subscribe to, there's a bunch of wonderful newsletters and breaking business alerts at Crane's Chicago Business. And it's always included in the afternoon, email blast. So that's the way to get it.
All right. Well, we'll be tuning in this afternoon to hear about this and all the other little details of the Chicago workday that you're sort of including.
Great. Thanks so much.
And very nice to see you again.
Good to see you.